All right, welcome to Medi-Call episode 191. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo!
And we've got a guest here today, as promised. Wojtek Radoj, also known as Laplasian on MTGO, is joining us. Hey, Wojtek.
Yeah, hey guys, hello everybody.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, just quite late in the night, but I'm doing great.
Yeah, so Wojtek is joining us from Poland, so I thank you for being up at, we're starting at midnight for you, aren't we?
Yeah, sure. My family was in the United States a couple of years ago, so I know how this works, and fortunately you're on the right coast for me.
Fortunately, you're a bit of a night owl anyway, right? You're staying That's up true. Until like 3 o'clock in the morning to play some of these challenges lately.
No, I'm not waking up 3 in the morning. I'm just staying in the late in the night,
yeah,
up to 3 in the morning or something like that.
Cool. Well, we were going to have you last week, and then something came up, which is not a big deal at all. And at that point, you had 2 weekends of challenge top 8s in a row. Do you now have 3 weekends in a row?
I mean, I'm not counting weekends or something like that. I just know that from recent like modern challenges and so on, I have made a couple of top 8s.
Yeah, you've got
like 3 or 4 of them, actually. Yes, might be something like that. So, but honestly, there are much more right now of them than it used to be because of this coronavirus stuff. And
yeah.
Wizards made a double challenge every weekend on MTGO plus like 2 or 3 PTQs or super PTQs. So there's a lot of things to play, definitely.
Yeah, so we're definitely going to talk about his take on that. This isn't the first time we've had Wojtek on the show. He's actually a longtime contributor to the website as well, and you may know his work on Collected Company in the past, and then there was a long run with Eldrazi Tron and tons of trophies with that deck. So now he's back on Collected Company Vizier decks with Luris, of course, so we'll be talking about that today. Before we do, I need to mention our sponsor, Manatraders.com. You can use the promo code Modern Medi-Call, all one word, Metacall, not medical. I realized that was confusing just last week after we've been promoting that one for about a year. So Modern Medi-Call, all one word, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout. So, sweet. We talked a little off the cast about the coronavirus and how things are different for you out there in Poland. I know people aren't here to hear about that, but has this like affected your schedule, your ability to play at all?
I mean, I really miss tabletop Magic, and I think this is probably true for everybody who was playing Magic, because yeah, like MTGO is super fun for me. I don't like Arena, it's not my style, not my format, and I like MTGO, but I think that no matter what do you play, what do you like or not, you just wanna play this tabletop Magic, even if it's just FNM, you just really miss it. Like this is true. It's strange time, but I think like Poland is probably doing okay. Hard to say because we don't have any like full data on anything because you know, this is like problematic. But I think we are just getting released from home just a bit more than we used to. I definitely sit more at home, so I have more time for playing. So I'm really thankful for Wizards, because they like made much more tournaments, and I think this is like paying off because people are not only sitting home and being more safe, but just like spending more time there, and like probably Magic is not in any danger because of this coronavirus stuff. Because you don't sell your product, right? Because probably if you're not selling, then you cannot organize that much stuff, and you cannot send like packs to every single country you want. But I think that Magic is not in any danger. It was a very good move, in my opinion.
In fact, I wonder if they're even doing better with their online offerings these days than normal because of all the time that people have.
Might be.
And the need, you know, the desire to play that sort of thing. I do worry about the local game shops, and I hope that WotC continues to support them. I know they've done some things.
We don't have the problem, I think, that because Wrocław is like the city where I'm from, it's not too big to have like 10 or more shops, and that people are not like connected to them. We have only 2 big shops with MTG, and we are really like, this is not only the place when you buy, but this is the place when you, for example, meet your friends or stuff like that. Just buy any other board games, which are really, really popular right now, I think. So I guess that our shops are doing really well. because there are many people that are doing much, much worse. And I hope this will be like just a week or two more of this strange situation, and then we'll maybe go back to playing, visiting, and being just normal life.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
And I know you mentioned, I'm changing gears here a little bit, but you mentioned a moment ago, you stay away from Arena. You don't ever play Standard or anything like that, do you?
No, I just played Standard like once or twice when I qualified for the Pro Tour or something else. I just don't. So I can't tell you anything about Standard.
Okay, I was just curious. I've always wondered about that. You know, it's hard to find time for all these things, because even like a league, running through a league takes a couple of hours. So it's hard to be the specialist in all formats.
Yeah, I mean, that's true for sure. I like drafting sometimes. I like to play some Legacy, maybe some other Chaos drafts, or maybe not Chaos draft, maybe some other drafting with my friends. But yeah, it would be hard to find time for everything.
Yeah.
Even for Modern, when you have more than one deck, it's like very difficult to play them both.
Yeah, you have historically stayed true to one deck and really concentrated on improving your skills on one deck. My attention lasts a lot less. I have to change decks more frequently because I just get antsy. You know, I want to do something different. But I can always appreciate players that really, really, you know, tune their art and really get down and dirty with one archetype like you have. So
yeah.
Kudos.
You know what? When I had a huge trouble because a lot of things happened in like last 6 months or so. I don't want to go too much into details, like giving credit or hating Wizard decisions, at least not yet, because Eldrazi Tron was good, very good. Then it got worse. Then it got much worse. Good again. And right now it's probably like hardly out of metagame. And the question was for me what to play now, because when Banned Snow Control was the best deck, and probably some Urza Blink, Urza, Temur Urza or something like that. Mm-hmm. Then I had huge troubles beating those decks with the Eldrazi Tron. I made some challenges to beat, but it like was not enough. I was feeling that the deck is already getting worse and worse. Yeah. Then I switched to Pawn.
Uh-oh.
A big player when everybody was like trying to fight control with Amulet or something like that,
yeah.
Or Green Tron with Veil of Summer, and then I tried to like jump into the train of let's get them with Ponza. It was like for 1 week or 2 weeks it was a very good deck, and then it just stopped being a deck at all. And then
when you say Ponza, are you talking
about
the
red,
green
mid-range.
Red like mid range? Yeah, okay.
yeah.
You get
red, green, Magus, Blood Moon, Pillage, and so on.
Yeah, you cut out for a second when you said that. I thought you were saying Ponza. I was like,
wow. Yeah, I'm saying
that's
Ponza.
That's our nemesis. There's an Eldrazi Tron player.
Not really.
No,
I mean, it is a difficult deck to beat with Eldrazi Tron, but it's doable. Definitely not easy, but doable. I think this Eldrazi Tron has better Ponza matchup than Amulet Titan or Green Tron, but. But yeah. Let's leave it for maybe another discussion. And then Companions got released. Ponza got back a little with Obosh, but I was like looking for a deck for me, because like Eldrazi Tron, in my opinion, is like very difficult to play right now. It's like we can go into details of this later. But so I was looking for a deck, and like I really did not want to play Burn, Lures Burn. I did not want to play Lures Jund, because I asked myself a question like, why am I going to win, let's say, like a couple of mirrors, a couple of other matches? Why? Because I will be more lucky, sure. But why else? I have never played this deck. I don't know it too good.
Yeah.
So I decided to go for a deck that I know very well. And even if I'm maybe an underdog, because this is not like the best deck in the metagame, and I have like problems beating Prowess or maybe regular Jund, then I decided that, well, okay, but I will get my percentages back when I'm just like into the game, and I know what decisions should I make, because I spent like tons of hours playing devoted decks, and probably this just paid me off like in recent weeks, making like some cool results.
Yeah,
so this was like my thought process, I guess.
Yeah, so here you are on Devoted Devastation again.
Again, yeah, I'm surprised.
I think there are a lot of players glad to hear you back on that deck, and
myself including.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm surprised in a way because of the representation of Jund, but also Burn is what I was trying to say. both of those decks seem tough for the creature-centric decks, but is it that, like, Lurrus provides that much of an advantage where you can overcome those deficiencies?
Not really. Not really. If you play against Jund, this is one of the worst matchups in from the tier decks right now. The more blue-black removal they have, like in post-board games, that in the better shape we are, yeah. Because of Vale of Summer, we just play straight for Vale of Summer, and this is like one of the reasons the deck is good right now, I guess. The second thing is that if they go for, I mean, if they draw more bolts, more Seal of Fire, and Wrens, then probably we're gonna lose the game. Speaking about burn, we have like a very good sideboard plans, and probably we can beat them with Core, with Barrenton Forge Sender, bringing it back with Lurrus. Yeah, we have some options. And an option just to go at almost instant speed. I mean, just untap, bring back Druid with Haste from Grave and go off this way. This is also one of the very strong aspects of this deck.
Yeah.
The aspect we never explored before in that numbers. I mean, at least I did not, because the combo was never like the 100% plan, like everything we put into combo. We had some mid-range plan. Right now, this is not true. We just draw more cards with Lurrus and Bubble just to get more chances for combo. That's all. And Lunch is giving us huge chance. Really, Burn just have to tap out sometimes, just going for the kill, and then you untap and kill them.
Yeah.
Kill them back. So yeah, this is...
Yeah, Resolve or Firewalker is very good against Burn. I see you're loaded up on that stuff. I mean, I'm looking at your sideboard here from the, let's see, May 3rd. This was from a challenge. 2 Burnton Forge Tender and 3 Core Firewalker. That's a hell of a lot of burn hate.
Yeah, and I'm the one playing like the least amount of cores because everybody's loading like 4 of them if you're playing Burn Lures or Prowess Lures.
Yeah.
Because they are like full of like Path to Exile, 4 Path and 4 Core. And this is like your plan into Mirror. Draw more Path than they draw cores or something like that. And honestly, recently I have cut 1 core instead playing with 4th copy of Path to Exile, and I'm glad, I'm happy. And I think that the sideboard is like probably not very strong because those decks are ready to play against 4 core Firewalker, but you have to be aware of Giver of Runes, keep Druid like without summoning sickness, just kill it as fast as you can, and then you have to also kill core, maybe also kill Lurrus, so you have a lot of things to kill. I think that we can sneak some wins in with like 4 red proof creatures.
Yeah, I think so too. Now let's step back to bigger picture for a little bit, because we can get into the specifics of the deck a little later on, but to address those that are coming to the podcast, you know, that pilot other decks, we talked a lot last week between Daryl and I about this whole companion mechanic situation. And Daryl and I have like semi-different views on the whole thing. Both of us like generally like the idea of companions. We sort of agree on that front. Daryl thinks they're sort of fine as is. The best action, and Daryl, I'll let you kind of clarify this. Ban Lurrus, yeah.
So there's two directions on that. It's either A, you ban the problematic ones because the mechanic itself is fine. So Lurrus is really, you know, what we're seeing trap up as the problem. But the secondary answer is leave them all and tack on an actual price to casting the card, like as a cost, exile a card. So you're not ending up in a situation where you totally manipulate the rules of Magic insofar as you don't get to keep your 7 card hand when you have 7. And then there is a real cost of like, you're not getting just a free card. So those are like my two opinions on like how you could change these things. But like realistically, I think the most logical one is just like if Lurrus is truly a problem, let's ban Lurrus and like have those decks that are really trying to play this thing reset and see like, is anything else going to be super problematic?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on more like the ban Bauble train, as that card seems to be the most ubiquitous tool alongside Lurrus. But that all being said, like, there's a lot of representation from Lurrus decks right now. There's no doubt about that. Maybe something needs to be done. We might have to see a little bit more. But my question to you is, from the perspective of someone that's played a lot of Modern lately and played a lot of the deck that includes Lurrus, or a deck that includes Lurrus, is this negatively impacting the metagame? Does action need to be taken? What do you think?
This topic is like very widely discussed in the internet, in the whole at least Magic centered part of the internet. So I don't want to like talk too much about it in the sense I don't want to elaborate my expressions too much. I will start with this that I have good results, like very good results. I'm super happy with the deck I'm playing right now. I never thought I will be playing the Druid again. But still, after Companions got released, I felt like, okay, I focused on the Drazi Tron. I had the deck for some time. Maybe I wanted to buy, I don't know, some more cards for it, some foil cards for it, whatever. And right now, new set got released. I don't have a deck anymore. So this is like pretty much the case of Standard, that Modern became a rotating format. And I have read a couple of articles that were like claiming such theses. And sadly, I think I'm quite in agreement with this. I'm afraid they will ban Bubble because this is probably being as safe as possible. Just when they knew Hogak was the problem, then they banned Breach from below.
Right.
I'm fine. Breach was, in my opinion, just a stupid card. Like, now do nothing on board, do something great, like giving this and that for zero mana and so on. It was strange and problematic by itself. But they banned this just because they were afraid to ban Hogak. Yeah, let's give it some more time. Sure, we have like a couple more months of just bad Modern. And I'm afraid they will do the same here. They will ban Bubble because they will be afraid that they haven't even sold the product yet. So Lurus is not even in the shop. So let's just ban Bubble, leave Lurus safe, and we'll go back to the discussion in a couple of months. And we'll serve you a couple of months of the same Modern, almost the same Modern you have. I think that it would be very good if they ban at least Lurus, maybe Lurus and something. I would love probably to see more bans. I'm in the Astrolabe ban train in both Legacy and Modern. I don't know if there is anybody in the same train for me as I am in Modern, but I think that Astrolabe is another card that is like making Modern worse than good. So I would love to see like Lurus, Bubble and Astrolabe banned. And then we can see what will happen to Modern. But
yeah,
I will come back to what I started with. So for a couple of sets, we see Modern changing very much with every single set that is coming out. And I had the same situation, but for much, much longer period of time, that I had to drop Company because, in my opinion, it was just bad. When Creeping Chill and Arclight Phoenix got released in Guilds of Ravnica, I just couldn't play this deck because, like, against Arclight Phoenix, Blue Red Phoenix, it was just impossible to win the match with them.
Right.
And after, of course, a lot of time have passed, but right now I have seen my deck, meaning Eldrazi Tron, getting worse and worse, and I know the same will happen to Lurus Devoted Druid deck. It will be either by banning Lurus, banning Bubble, or anything like this, or just printing new cards. Because like Wizards are pushing the limits, and they are pushing power level very much, and this is something like I don't like. So yeah, I think I will get back to all the points I have mentioned in our discussion, but I will just give you a voice back for now.
Real quick, though, I agree this subject is a little played out, so I don't want to go too deep on it, but I know people are interested in hearing your opinion on it. You mentioned the different options for the bans. Say Mishra's Bauble does go first. I think that's the one that a lot of people are predicting at this point. We're hoping for, like, you know, maybe more action to be taken. But if Bauble goes, is Bauble Lurus the combination that makes this deck playable again, or what? I mean, I should rephrase that. If Bauble goes, what happens to the deck?
What happens to Lurus Druid? Yeah. I think it will be much worse, and I think it will not. It will still be a deck, but I think this will probably be tier 2, maybe lower. Because decks like Urza, decks like Yorion, decks like Ban Snow Control, they will lose nothing. Right now, I can play the game with, for example, Ban Snow Control, which is highly underrepresented because of like many things. I can even outgrind them with Lures, which is madness. And if they will cut bubble. I'm losing like the biggest engine of my deck, and right now playing lures. Okay, so I do this, but until turn four, I have nothing from lures, so I need something else. I'm not gonna play like any other zero mana artifacts like Moxhammer because this is useless. So I will have to find other ways, but other decks, like for example, let's say Ban Snow or I don't know, Amulet will lose nothing. Amulet right now is a very good matchup. I keep losing to this deck in top eights, but this matchup is very good. And they will lose nothing. And we will lose a lot.
Yeah.
And this would be a problem, whether you really want to play the deck that got hurt by the banning and still try to play with it, or you will find a deck that like left the banning, you know, with no harm. And I think this would be the biggest problem. If everybody gets banned, I think we can do this. Playing just Veil, playing Postmortem Lunge, playing Lurus to get something back and so on, this would be fine. If Bobble and Yorion and something else, I don't know, for example, I don't want to shoot into the air, but I don't know, let's say Dryad of Elysian Grove. If every deck gets some ban, we can do this. Mm-hmm. If only Bobble gets banned, our deck is just losing a lot of tempo, a lot of speed, a lot of card advantage, and I think this would be like very bad for the deck, for its power.
Yeah, and that's considering that a Bobble ban would affect tons of other decks too. Yeah, Amulet
every
seems
Lures
to be,
deck
to
and
be
probably every Urza deck.
Yeah.
I mean, don't understand me wrong. I think that Urza that Mishra's Bubble is a card that should get banned probably some time ago. I mean, probably the first time when we were talking about the ban of Mishra's Bubble was the time when Grixis Shadow was the deck, or Jund Shadow. We are really talking like, wow, this deck is insane. You are playing like 52 cards in the deck because of Bubble and Street Raid. Wow, this is nuts. And then Mishra's Bubble just got forgotten because there were always better cards in the deck that were obviously broken. And right now with Lurus, you see that like, okay, Lurus is like draining some huge power from Bubble and some other interactions. And the problem is that I think that this will not solve all the problems. I mean, of course, this will stop people from playing for Bubble in every Lures deck.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
This is some point. But a lot of other decks will still have a lot of power and resilience. And 8th card in the hand, it turns out, okay, it is just nuts. If you can do it, you just do it. And you play Lures in every deck. And this is another problem. Like, come on, they have made this hybrid mana. Why? Because they wanted every deck to play it, really? And the same situation is with Yorion. You just make it double white, double blue, and you have less problems.
Right.
But of course, blue is not a problem when you're playing four Astrolabes in every deck that also combos with Yorion. So I don't like recent Wizards printings. And really, I would love to see some fast ban because, okay, I know that not every tournament is won by Lures, but come on, we have seen like top 8 with 7 Lures decks. I think this is not the situation that should happen to Modern. One more thing, Modern should be a non-rotating format. So why, after every other set released, we like change the top of the meta so dramatically from, I don't know, War of the Spark? I think that those Wizards are going in a very, very bad way for Eternal formats. No, I'm not mentioning Legacy and Vintage, where Companions also are destroying metagame completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're hitting on a whole second can of worms here now, right? Because and we talked about this was our topic last week was the Companions and then also the rotating format that is Modern, and both of us agreed that like obviously this benefits WotC because they're selling packs to players that are playing Eternal formats, so you can see the incentive there. On the topic of Companion, there was something that came out today on. I think it was on the mothership here. Mero basically is speaking to the companion mechanic.
This is something I did not mention. Yeah, I wanted to mention everything. I did not mention that. Yeah, but continue. I will answer later maybe.
I'm gonna read his response because someone asked some good questions about here's the question he's replying to. If Companion ends up being well-received, can we expect to see more extra deck or outside the game type of effects in standard legal sets? That was asked in April of 2020, and now here we are in an environment where Companions are overly prevalent. So here's what he says about that. He says, one of my game design truisms is success breeds repetition. That is, when you do something and your audience likes it, you're more apt to do something similar in the future. Companion has proven to be a very polarizing mechanic online, so I'm interested to see how players feel about it once they've gotten a chance to play with it. if it ends up being popular, there's a pretty healthy vein of design we can explore. Okay, then another of my game truisms is the greatest risk is not taking risks. What makes Magic magic is that it's a dynamic game that's constantly changing and trying new things. Not everything works out, but that's okay. Magic can survive things that end up being problematic. All right? mixed opinions on that, right? Trust me.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
The game's history is littered with things that cause headaches. What's far more dangerous is us making sets that don't excite anyone. I'd much rather make a mechanic that's polarizing than make one that everyone forgets in a day. Will companions be awesome, an awesome creation or a horrible mistake? I bet a lot of people are going to play a lot of games to find out. Selling cards, right? Also, we've played a lot of games with it in R&D. It's pretty fun. We put things out. We don't put things out if we don't see a lot of upside potential.
Okay, this is like very important thing that you mentioned, because I was talking to one of my friends recently, and they said probably when Planeswalkers got printed in Lorwyn, I guess.
Yeah, Lorwyn.
I think so. So before that, I think they had like a couple of sets when they could not sell too much, and probably they were thinking even about closing the whole business. I might sell you some gossip, but I've heard some rumors like that. Okay. And they decided, okay, we are going into Planeswalkers. Maybe people will like it. Yeah, we have one shot. If not, we are closing the business. And it turned out that people love Planeswalkers. And right now we might talk about this. Like, of course, this was like a gold shot. It was super good because everybody was like, oh yeah, let's go. And Magic just bloomed from this moment. But at that time, people might still talk about this, like, Planeswalkers, yeah, you are ruining modern. You are not modern. You are destroying Magic. What's going on? Of course, that companion as a new idea that is exciting for all the people, it's fine. But the problem, I think, is that they make new cards so absurdly powerful, because I think that there are Planeswalkers, there are companions that could be good, playable, and not destroy whole formats. This is first of all. Second of all, you just can make companions for standard, not to destroy the whole like play game of eternal formats like Legacy, Vintage, Modern, and so on. You just can make them for standard. You will see whether people like it or not. Make them just less powerful. You will see, because as probably Jim Davis mentioned, eighth card in hand, this is already broken. This is already broken. If you start with more cards in hand, like your opponent mulliganing every single game, does not matter how bad your matchup is. Sometimes you win just because your opponent is mulliganing. So you have extra card. This is already very powerful.
Yeah, punishes further the feel bad of mulliganing. Yes. Right?
And then you add such a powerful effect to them that this is already smells that something is going to get broken. Mm-hmm. So I understand and I agree that, okay, you have to make new things. You have to make people excited about Magic, because if not, they will, at some moment, they will just drop playing Magic because this is boring. This is, everything is the same for like year or two. This is bad. But first of all, you make changes in drafts, you make changes in, I don't know, coverage, tournament structure, everything. You make changes in standard, but you just can make changes slower in eternal formats. This is the first thing. The second thing, I guess that Vintage and Legacy are already in a very bad shape after Companions released, and Modern is in rough shape. I think they should respond faster, because I understand you make something new, you risk it because you really want the game to be dynamic, to, you know, fulfill people's expectations that it will be exciting for like years and years, because people invest money, invest time, and they just watch the game develop. Mm-hmm. But if you see the situation is very bad, then you just react. I still hear people saying that metagame will adjust, just give it some time. Yeah, we have heard the same story with Oko. We have heard the same stories with Hogak. Metagame did not adjust there, and it will not adjust here, in my opinion. I mean, of course, there are some single tournaments where, for example, like Green Tron is fighting Ad Nauseam, like in last Modern Challenge. Why? Because Ad Nauseam is beating all the Lures burn decks, and Green Tron is beating all the mid-range Lures decks. Okay, super, fine. but how many Lurus decks you had in the top 8? I don't know, 4, 5, maybe 6. And this is like not fair to say to people playing Eternal format, you have to buy Lurus and 4 bubbles or you're just not playing competitive. I understand. Yeah. You're making new card, new mechanic, okay, but come on, let's start it slowly. Those cards were like obviously broken. And when everybody looked at Hogak after it got released, probably everybody knew, everybody playing any graveyard deck at all, everybody knew this is so broken that it's just unreal. And it, like, it was, situation was much, much easier then, because you just pack 4 Leyline of the Void into main deck and sure, let's go. Meta game adjusted. Right, and you had like 4 copies or 3 copies of Leyline in every deck at the Pro Tour when Hogak was a thing. Okay, sure, you had 1 Hogak in top 8 and it still means nothing. And yeah, right now the situation is much different. I would just finish one word, because Lures is not a graveyard-based card. It's not a graveyard-based deck. So we just cannot bring 4 ley lines and pretend that everything is fine, because this is much more complex. You just use graveyard in some part, but if you don't have a graveyard hit, they always have a Lures in hand. This causes a lot of problems.
It's starting to feel like the ley line being necessary as a sideboard tool to every deck is just like removal, like cheap removal, Fatal Push, Path to Exile. Like, you've got to have some way to kill Lurus. And I think that's most apparent for like humans players, right? Who have to like bring in dismembers against decks that they normally wouldn't even like bother with creature removal because they just can't deal with like Lurus looping problems.
Might be. And speaking about humans, one more thing that I honestly don't like. You have Giganta there. What for? For nothing. I have never seen it being cast. I have never seen it winning games. Not why you put it problem. In your sideboard? Not against, I mean, I'm watching some streams. I'm not a super fan of humans, so I'm not watching all the human streams, but I have watched like Cedric Phillips streaming them. I have never seen Giganta doing anything. And why do you keep it in your sideboard, like cutting yourself off this member? Just because you can. Just because that's how powerful 8 card in hand is. Yeah. And if you notice such thing, then you start asking, okay, this card is awful. 5 mana, 5/5, like vanilla, do nothing, have no important card type. So why do you keep it? Just because you can. And if this is the case, then how bet you need to make a card for people not to play it. If you make any bit better this card, then everybody will play it. So this is the problem, I think. Because if you force people to play something, this is the problem. They got excited with new cards, sure. And then you have like 1 or 2 months of playing Lures here and there, and you are just done. You are bored because of another reason, not because new set is not interesting. Because this new set is taking the whole space. You have nothing else to play.
Yeah. Giganta in humans is an interesting one. I can see the advantages. You know, the humans players always talk about how you can get through Blood Moons. You can cast it through Blood Moons, which would normally be very painful for that deck to endure without an Aether Vial.
For sure.
But yeah, it's just, it does, it's really awkward in the deck. Like getting to 5 mana is really unlikely. It's not a human. It's one of those ones. It's just like, you just do it because you can. So I think that the dipstick is going to be like, once we see Giganta showing up in, green Tron decks because they can, then we know that shit has really hit the fan.
Yep. That's true. And it has like no flavor at all, too much reasoning there. You just, if you can start with 8 cards, just do it. Do it. And this is the problem, because I think we don't want to see decks where everybody is playing companion. I know that the same story might have been with planeswalkers. You don't want planeswalker in every deck, sure, but we are so far behind the moment of painting planeswalkers that we see that they are very good. There are very bad planeswalkers. There are planeswalkers that play in every deck of chosen color, like, I don't know, Small Teferi, Jace, or something like that. And you have decks that completely cut planeswalkers. I'm not playing planeswalkers. I never did in company deck. Never mind with Lures or without. We have, what else? We have Burn. We have, like, Hardened Scales and so on. They don't play planeswalkers. They don't have to. What about companions? Almost every deck is running companion. Mm-hmm. And this is a problem because you just have one set of companions and you have like tons of sets with planeswalkers. So honestly, I understand they need to make and you said interesting, but I'm like, I'm feeling deeply bad about how fast all the formats got dominated by companions and by lures.
Yeah.
At the first place.
Yeah, the message I read seems to kind of promise more of this too. So be prepared.
promise more of this.
More powerful cards. You know,
I mean,
being printed
you first need to clean the mess that you have already before you make a new one. So yeah. if they really think about printing new companions, that's fine. But think about power level twice.
Yeah.
And really clean what we have in Eternal Formats right now. This is like the first thing to do.
All right. On another note, let's change gears a little bit. Daryl is a big Soul Herder fan, and as a player who appreciates value, have you played the deck at all? Banned Soul Herder.
Soul Herder. No, I have not. When Soul Herder became a thing, probably invented by Gabe Nassif, right? I was already playing Eldrazi Tron. Like still playing a Eldrazi Tron with some Torpor Orbs, so I was like feeling fine against this deck. And when I stopped playing Eldrazi Tron, I probably quite fast jumped into Devoted Druid. So I did not have a free space to test Soul Herder. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting deck, definitely. But as I see right now, all the decks playing Yorion collapsed to either ban Snow Yorion or just Urza Yorion, I think, or Yorion control. Like decks are probably many interesting archetypes are collapsing to the one that is using this companion the best.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of diversity, right? I mean, we have a lot of lures decks, but honestly, the burn is the fastest and is beating Chand. And if you want to beat burn, you probably jump into Harden's Case, but I guess they will not survive. Harden's Case are too weak.
Yeah,
so play just lures burn, and everything else is like something that can beat burn. So like some amulets, some what else? Ad nauseum. And this was my idea, basically just to play very good deck as lures with Bud Bubble, speaking of Devoted Druid deck, and maybe beat people that try to beat burn, something like that. Yeah,
if your plan A is value, I think the Lurrus Bobble cycle is providing value to a lot of decks that don't really have much business in it.
Yeah,
and you mentioned how you can go toe to toe with like the Bant Snow decks with I think it was Bant Snow or the Urza decks or something you said earlier.
Something like that. Yeah.
Because
I have seen Soul Herder. I have not played it, but I think it has like disappeared recently because it turns out that Yorion is just more powerful in other shells, and people just completely dropped Soul Herder right now, as it probably could be quite weak to Lava Darts and Monorith Prowess. I mean, Boros Prowess right now.
Yeah. A lot of people have, at least the way I've been playing it, I've walked away from all of the X1s, except for like Eternal Witness, like playing less Soul Herders. I cut Coiling Oracle, and I started playing a bunch of walls. Still have the cantrip creatures that also effectively block prowess because they definitely have to 2-for-1 themselves to try and get through a wall. They have to like spend like a bolt and then attack and have me block. So it's like they have to spend a lot to get through walls. So like I've moved to like walls and stuff like that.
That's
but yeah, true. I definitely think that it is kind of offensive to have Astrolabe be a magic card in the same format as Yorion. Just because like it's been so good that I played Abundant Growth as more copies of Astrolabe just to have the effect of filtering your mana and like drawing a card. Because like the Soul Herder decks were playing like Kiki Jiki. They were splashing a triple red card because with like one red source because they had four Astrolabe. And there's like between four Astrolabe and some Birds of Paradise, we can splash this triple red card that we plan on courting for most of the time anyway. So, like, yeah, I think Astrolabe is problematic, but, like, the deck has felt enjoyable, but I definitely don't, like, you definitely struggle with, like, the combo decks because you have to pick, like, are you going to try and beat Big Mana and play Avalanche Riders? Are you going to, what combo are you going to play? But, like, if you try and beat Big Mana and play some combo, then, like, you lose the slots for, like, Force of Negation and, like, interaction with or like Force Negation interactional combo. So you have to like load up your sideboard with like bullets and creatures against combo, because most of them are playing Cord now. And like Yorion makes your, you know, four negates or whatever you would want to bring in much less effective, because you're going to draw them less often. So now you have to like try and force your sideboard to be like a majority creature so that you can use Court of Calling. So it's like there's trade off there. And so it's,
I can imagine that the deck is very interesting, because because it's like a Court of Calling deck with a lot of cards, with a lot of sideboard options in the main deck already. But going back to the Astrolabe problem, I think that this card is like problematic, because it like does too much for too little cost.
Yeah.
And this also collapses people. I've heard something like that on SCG, probably, that this is awful because everybody would be playing snow covered basics right now. And why? Come on, you have made like 20 years of basic lands, and right now everybody would be playing snow covered. Like, what for? Yeah. And it turns out that the cost is like nothing, and you get something. Maybe you treat your opponent into haha, maybe I'm playing snow deck.
Right.
So this is like partially a problem, just not the biggest one we have, but this is a problem too.
Oh yeah, it's another like, would, why not, you know, because it's, well, just there's no cost to include it.
This is a problem. I would love to see Astrolabe getting banned, because in my opinion this card is also quite problematic, like does too much for too little. And the same story I've heard, like watching some, probably Tom Ross stream, he said that speaking about small Teferi, if you switch his ability plus one and static, everything will be fine. If you make plus one, your opponent cannot cast instant speed spells, just sorcery, and you make passive, you can cast sorceries at instant speed, everything will be fine. Yeah, you just plus your Teferi, your opponent is responding, you make a counter magic fight, cool. And because static is more powerful than plus one option. Another thing, what Reed Duke mentioned at his stream, on the other hand, is that Teferi is 3-mana planeswalker. He's entering, bouncing the most dangerous permanent, whatever it is, enchantment, artifact, creature, this is almost anything, drawing a card and staying on the battlefield, shutting off your opponent's every instant action. Like, this is too much for too little. If you just make him -3 and start at 3, if you want to leave him on the battlefield, you just have to work harder. Maybe plus him, play him after blockers, and so on. Right now, he's doing like a lot. Drawing a card, bouncing most devastating permanent, staying on the battlefield, shutting off instant actions. This is too much. And like those problems we had with many cards recently, sadly, because like, as I mentioned, power level is like going very high. In my opinion, it should not go that high that fast. We have seen the same story with Oko, Hogak, Once Upon a Time, Veil of Summer is also very pushed card. So yeah, sadly we see that situation repeat.
Solving all of Modern's problems at this point.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're getting tons of suggestions. Sorry to collapse
to this, but I just can't speak about Companions and about the Devoted Druid deck and not mention how I had to drop it, how coming back to it, and why. Why? Because my previous deck just got unplayable. Why? Because of this and that printing. How fast? Like, quite fast.
Yeah. Well, you have a new Twitter account, and we've got a couple of questions for you on that Twitter. That is at Laplasian on Twitter.
Oh yeah, thank you for mentioning that.
I will put the link in the show notes as well, so you can click on that and follow him. This was made yesterday, yes?
Yeah, it's like 2 days old.
Pretty fresh. That's true. So we've got a couple of questions. One of them we kind of covered already, but someone wanted to hear speculation on Companion ban, and would Druid be viable post-Companion? We already talked about that, but is there anything you want to add to that conversation?
I think I would like to add one thing, because when Michael Sinclatis got banned, I said that probably there is no reason to play Eldrazi Throne anymore. And I was wrong for a long time, and right now I'm right, because, like, okay, right now Eldrazi Throne is quite bad. Obviously, I was not right. I just, after some time, the metagame will just change. Yeah, eventually the metagame will just change. But the same story is here. Like, why keep playing the deck that just got banned, just got hurt badly, if you can switch to decks that left the bannings like without any damage? So this was the question. It turned out that Eldrazi Throne still was a very good deck for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Druid deck will still be playable, but I think without either Lures or Bubble, it will just drop quite dramatically. It will not be right now, in my opinion, this is tier zero, tier one, because I'm like competing with any deck in the format, and I'm my deck is resilient and fast. But without any of the pieces that we are mentioning, Bubble, Lures, and so on, I think that the deck will get much worse, sadly much worse.
Yeah. All right. I would believe
But wait for a second. There is an option. We can still go with other options, other companions. There is Zirda, which allows for very interesting combos. So there are options.
Yeah, no, Zirda pairs with like Umbral Mantle and stuff, right?
Isn't yep, exactly. Doing?
Yeah, so Vizier would be out of the question because it doesn't have an activated ability, but completely different build.
True, but still some creature toolbox decks.
Right, yeah. And then the other question, Lurrus Druid, is Lurrus Druid the only viable Devoted Druid deck available? Trying to play around with Devoted Heliod Company, and it feels not bad, but I don't know how good it is because I don't play MOL. I'm not sure what that's.
Magic Online.
Thank you. So I don't know how it works against the real meta.
I did not play. I mean, I was playing Heliod deck when Once Upon a Time was still legal, so quite some time ago without companion yet. I think this deck is probably not as good because I don't see it making any results. And as I'm right now deep into Lure's devoted deck, so I can't say without testing too much. I think this deck is probably reasonable because we have some options there, and a combo Spike Feeder Heliod should be very good against burn decks, which we have a lot recently. But I'm afraid that its speed and its power level will not be good enough to compete in broader meta. So I'm afraid right now this is like not tier one, maybe tier two, tier two and a half, something like that. I don't want to say anything offensive, but we don't see results of it for the reason. There are people that are trying some creature toolbox decks. So this is just the case. This deck is not a very good one, in my opinion.
I can speak from experience too that deck is miserable to play online with the way that the combo plays out.
Oh, this is completely
another thing. Something to do with that's representation too.
I was about to say it just looks like from my perspective, kind of not knowing these decks very well, like you lose a lot of relevance cards because like looking at how do I accumulate a bunch of stuff with activated abilities? Well, okay. All of my mana dorks have activated abilities. I have to switch from Vizier to Umbral Mantle to make it work, which is pretty bad. So I can play Planeswalkers, but Zirda doesn't do anything for those. And, like, it decreases the cost on Duskwatch Recruiter and Heliod, but you still need a colored mana, so you're not really gaining too much speed there because you still have to play your 3-drop before you play your other 2 or 3 drops, so it doesn't seem like that's making you any headway either. So, like, it just looks like there's not a lot of clean things to do. Like, it's like Zirda is much better in formats where you can create fast mana, specifically with a card like Lion's Eye Diamond, because it makes exactly as much mana as you need for Zirda to be cast. And since it's not in your hand, you can just like pitch like the irrelevant cards in your hand to make your companion and like do the things you're going to do. And that's one of the many things that's causing a train wreck in Legacy right now is, you know, people playing Grim Monolith decks with LED and Zirda and just saying, all right, turn one Ballista you or whatever.
Yeah,
that's true.
Well, I'm going to add one question to the list here because this would be my personal question for you. It's completely selfishly, I'm interested in if your opinion on Vivian's Arcbow has changed over time. I know you were real psyched about that card when that first came out, and I still like it a lot as a sideboard piece, but have you done much testing with it recently?
No, since I was playing it at the very beginning when it got released, I did not play it from this moment. I still think that this is like the closest thing that we got, closest to Birthing Pod, but the fact was that this card is still not fast enough it was not fast enough for modern back then, mm-hmm. and it's not fast enough right now, because you pay like, let's say 3, 4, 5 mana, and still you are not sure what you're gonna get. Right. If you pay 3 mana for a 3 CMC creature, this is sort of okay. Instant speed and step, that's my fine. But if you are paying like 3, 4, 5 mana and you are not sure, you might get a mana dork. This is something you're not gonna accept in modern. And another problem is that this is a deck that is playing like heavily on mana creatures plan. Yeah. And sadly, in my opinion, creature decks got like seriously damaged by recent printings. Like Small Teferi, very good. Lava Dart, very good against creature. Ren and Seek, devastating against creature decks. The only hope is like, for example, okay, I play Giver of Runes. This creature cannot be killed by Ren and Seek. Okay, maybe I do some stuff. And Devoted Druid has the same problem because I'm playing like 6 to 7 one drops that have one toughness, and I can do this somehow. I can win matches somehow because I have like other tools. I'm a combo deck and so on. So here, if you play, your gameplay is based on an artifact, this is already a problem because like a lot of hate has been printed as well.
Yeah,
and your plan one. Exactly. For example, and your plan involves mana creatures, like one toughness. This is probably very risky line to take.
Yeah, fair enough. I like it out of the sideboard against control decks. It's really tough for them to keep up with that. That, you know, you've got this backdoor to like the Teferi problem against your instant speed creature tutors, and just like every top deck
for sure
something.
That's for sure. But the problem is that they can just like bounce your Arcbow or just Force of Negation it. Another very good card.
Yeah.
Not focused on around creature decks, but hurting creature decks somehow. Like for example, if you even have Birthing Pot Liga and you make this super good back then in the days, super good play like turn one Hierarch, turn two pay probably full life and play Birthing Pot, your opponent is just fine. Force of Negation it, next turn Land Teferi, bounce you Hierarch, draw a card, go on. So right now it looks just silly.
That sounds miserable. I'm a control player. I'm a control player at heart, and that sounds just absolutely miserable to feel, to be on the other end of.
What do you mean?
Miserable? I love playing control, okay. And like if I'm the guy in your seat playing Devoted or Birthing Pod, and my opponent does that, I just like slink back in my chair, and I'm just like, oh, how do I win this game? Like,
yeah,
I feel so far behind.
Exactly. So sadly, that's why you have to play Lurus like multiple bubbles. Then they puff your Lurus. You're already 2 cards ahead, and then when they finally play this Force of Negation, you're just probably loaded with Veil of Summer and so on. So sadly, you respond to their broken cards with your broken cards. Sadly, again, all the cards from 2019. This is another problem which I don't like. Everybody is playing with 2019 cards. Like a lot of broken stuff got printed then.
Yeah, it was a crazy year for the game.
yeah, that's for sure.
We only have a couple minutes left, right? But one final question for you here, and this is for the diehard toolbox creature players. Speaking of, you can hop on to our Creature Toolbox community on Facebook if you're interested in that sort of thing. But the toolbox package you're playing in this deck is different than what I'm used to seeing you play. You're on 4 Postmortem Lunge, 4 Illidomri's Call, yep. 4 Finale of Devastation, and 1 Court of Calling. Can you explain like the rationale behind those? Like what gives? Why no Coco anymore?
Coco, because first of all, you play just below 20 creatures, I guess, and this is by far not enough to hope that Coco will provide like the value you need. And the second thing is that you are just not a instant speed creature mid-range value deck, which honestly I was playing with Knight of the Reliquary, Tracker and so on, because this value plan is not gonna work. Tracker was very good, but it just cannot compete with all the planeswalkers and all the value that decks right now have in the late game with Field of Death and anything like that. And Greentron is not the deck anymore as it used to be, so we don't need Knight of the Reliquary and every other stuff. We are just combo deck, and we need our combo as soon as possible. So that's why we just play Eldam Recall, which is another card that we just milled through Company. This is no synergy there. So we just need to pay as little mana as possible to get our combo pieces on board. Sure. That's why we are playing 4 copies of Final of Devastation, which I did not like back in the days, because I just felt, you pay one more mana and you lose instant speed option. But then Mary got released. You use the Convoke option, but it turns out right now that you cannot Convoke because your Vizier and your your birds will just die from Lava Darts, for example. So you just don't care about this. You just want to pay as little mana as possible and get everything as soon as possible. Postmortem Lunge is just to catch opponents off guard just by comboing untap combo without Druid on board, which was not the case if you are not combo centric. Final is just cheaper. One Chord is just another option, maybe to play against humans, maybe just to combo, just to try to combo end step Druid untap combo against some decks. But honestly, just other way to get finish on board. But I think that Spellskite and Court of Calling are the, let's say, 59th and 60th card that you can feel like quite okay cutting them and changing for something else. You don't play toolbox. You don't have toolbox package. You don't play hate cards in the main, and you don't search for hate cards too often. You just have things that help you combo off. Right, even fair. Caterpillar or Casali or Reclamation Sage, anything, is there for only one thing, just to allow you to combo. And one thing I get with Eldam Recall and Final Devastation are the protection from red creatures in the matchup, because there you just either buy you such a lot of so much time that you can combo, or just can help you win the race because you gain life, because you block, because you jump, you second and protect your druid, something like that. So this is not a toolbox anymore. This is not a Maverick. This is not a Birthing Pot. This is like a creature combo.
This is a straight up combo deck. I was like looking at this deck, I'm like, there's no value here. Postmortem Lunge kind of dictates how realistically the deck is playing, because true. I mean, some people don't necessarily know the text on that, so I'm going to read it. It's Eldrazi Black and X. Sorcery, return target creature with converted mana cost X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, it gains haste, exile it. Yep. That's Phyrexian, sorry, not Eldrazi. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the whole point of that is, like you said, to bring back a druid and give it haste so that you can tap it, you can net mana and then try and get to a vizier. So like a very realistic thing you can do is, and if you just have a pair of Postmortem Lunges in the combo piece in your graveyard, is you can go lunge for 2, get back druid, make a green, untap it, make a green, it's an 0-1, bring back vizier for, you know, if you have 4 life, bring back vizier for 2, and then combo, make infinite mana, and do whatever it is you need to do.
Yeah, this is like another case why you just have to play Finale instead of Court. At least like multiple copies. Because sometimes you just bring back your druid and you have like 2 mana, 3 mana, 4 mana. You know, you cannot realistically hope that you're going to have 5 mana every time. So you just need as cheap cards as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And one more question I've been asking like a couple of times, why not 4 Canopies? First of all, because you are very white mana hungry. You go for Eldam Recall for Vizier. This is already 2 white. And sometimes you have like another Eldam Recall for Ballista. You need 3 white mana. So you very rarely can sacrifice Canopy at no cost. And another thing is that the deck is very fast and you have like a lot of things to do through early turns with Lurus and so on, that we don't want this extra draw. We play probably like 20 lands or something, so you really can sacrifice Canopy only in a very late game.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like one more thing why we cannot do this. Yeah, but as you mentioned, we need as much mana as possible as soon as possible. But sometimes it's just 5 mana; it's just not possible to cast for us.
All right, man. Well, I think we got to close out at this point, but we very much appreciate you taking the time to stay up late and join us on the cast today.
Thanks, guys, for the invitation. It was very nice to talk to you. Although the situation of Modern, at least for me, like, sounds problematic. I hope it will be cleaned up and Modern will be healthy again, because right now I think we are in somehow strange time when everybody's waiting for the ban, right? The situation happened already a couple of times. Right now nobody is buying cards, there are no paper tournaments, at least in the upcoming future. Mm-hmm. So nobody's in any rush, but everybody's waiting for the ban. So I hope next time we're gonna talk, we'll have like thoughts on the post-banning Modern, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we'll definitely have you on again in the future, and
thank you very much. I would love to go again.
Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. And if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.